Firefighting is not a job for everyone, wildland firefighting in particular. When you stop to think about long hours, lousy working conditions, intense pressure to perform, and the fact that the wind can change your life, it's a tough job. Oh, one more thing. Wildland firefighters have to learn more than putting fires out. They also occasionally set them and direct them. For that portion of the job, there are prescribed fire training exchanges. Training exchanges abbreviated to TREKS, including one currently underway in Ashland, bringing people in from, it turns out, several parts of the world. Chris Chambers is the Forest Division Chief at Ashland Fire and Rescue, our guest back in the studio once again. Chris, good to see you here.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And we have a guest as well from this TREKS in Ashland, this training exchange. Robert Gazzard is a forester and firefighter from Hampshire in England. Good to see you here, Robert.
Pleasure to be here.
Good to have you both here. Let's start with you, Chris, about training exchanges and the idea that some note comparison has to go on. Is this just for prescribed fire, or is it for wildland firefighting more broadly?
The skills definitely cross over. What they're learning now for using controlled burning or prescribed fire are very similar, if not the exact same skills that they're used for wildland firefighting during the summer. It's just a different application of those skills. The training exchange programs have been going on for several years now all across the country. There have been upwards of 50 of these exchanges held in a lot of different places in the United States, which speaks to the necessity of fire in various ecosystems, from grasslands and the plains to the Ozark Mountains, the Appalachians, and certainly in our forests of the West Coast. Fire is just an essential ecological process that has largely been taken away from our forests. And, for good reason, couldn't have blamed anybody 100 years ago for saying they didn't want their towns, which were largely made of wood, to burn down. And there's plenty of historical examples of that. But that lack of fire and taking it out of an ecosystem has had some very profound effects locally and nationally. And part of the prescribed fire training exchanges is the opportunity to work with communities, with various fire practitioners. It's a little bit of a struggle to use the word firefighters when we're actually becoming fire lighters at the same time, to use fire, put it back into the ecosystem as an essential process. And also, while doing that, we're reducing the fire hazard now, so that when we get to the summer and the wildfires start coming with lightning storms and, of course, humans causing fires as well, that those fires are mild instead of the severe fires that we've seen, like they're seeing in Canada now.
Up by Fort McMurray, Alberta.
Right. Yeah. Tragedy there. And certainly there have been many tragedies in the U.S. to speak of as well. And we want to avoid that fate, so we get the twofold benefit of decreasing fire hazard to our communities, protecting them, as well as putting an essential ecological process back into our local forest.
Is it still somewhat of a tough message to get across? Because on the one hand, I think you get a lot of people agreeing that if it's a natural part of the ecosystem, it belongs there. On the other hand, you get, as you had this week, when you have a prescribed burn up in the Ashland watershed, even though you've advertised that there are signs by the firehouses telling people that it's out there, people still call and say, "I saw smoke."
Yeah, and I think we're making a lot of progress on that front. More or less and less people are calling in to say, "Hey, there's a big wildfire above town. Did you know about it?" It's a control burn. We know about it. That pressure on our phones and at 911 dispatch has decreased significantly over the past 5 or 6 years. So I think we're making progress on that front. The challenge is smoke. And if we could do fire without smoke, of course, we would have done it a long time ago. But the reality is that smoke is inevitable. It's basically, we boil it down to burn. We got to burn or be burned. And we don't want to be burned in a way that we don't control the outcome. In prescribed burning, we have tight specifications when we use fire. And there have been some notable exceptions when fires that have been set have gotten away. But by and large, the fires are well controlled, they're having the intended effects, and we're accomplishing a lot of important work in front of the fire season. But the smoke piece, a lot of people have breathing difficulties and respiratory issues, and there's really no way around that. But we are going to get smoke, and it's a matter of whether it's on our terms or it's up to just the whims of weather and fire in August, when we really don't have a lot of say, and some of the severe effects are those that we really don't want as a society.
Prescribed fire and prescribed fire delivery training for it is the subject matter here in the exchange. We're talking about prescribed fire training exchanges, or TRECs, as they're known, by Chris Chambers at Ashland Fire and Rescue, and Robert Gazzard, who's a forester and firefighter from England. Join us on the exchange with questions or comments about the prescribed burning process and its use. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Robert, let's hear a bit about you. We were just talking before we even got on the air about the fact that we tend to assume wildland fire means forests here, but you're working in a rather different ecosystem in Hampshire and England. Tell us about what you're dealing with there.
Okay, so we don't have much in the way of wildland in the UK. We have more rural areas that have been managed by man for about 5,000 years or so, so it's slightly different. But the challenge we have is that we have these rather large urban areas now, and next to these large kind of rural areas, and we're having small fires, but they have huge impact. They disrupt our infrastructure, they disrupt our motorways, our power lines, etc. And that can have a big impact on us for a very short period of time. And that's a big impact on the fire rescue services, but also us as land managers as well.
So is prescribed fire becoming part of the routine in England then, in the UK?
We've had a culture of prescribed fire or controlled burning now for some time in certain parts, particularly like the New Forest, where they've been doing it for decades, if not hundreds of years, to manage the ecosystem over there. But what we're finding now is actually we've been doing that primarily in grasslands or in heathlands, upland or lowland heathlands. We haven't done it yet in our forests. And actually our forests are next to these major elements of national infrastructure where people live and so forth. And we're realising that actually we're going to have to manage our forests in a slightly different way than we've done in the past for various different challenges. So coming to here is very important to us because we haven't yet burnt under forests, certainly not in my area, and we have a great opportunity here to explore and to test that and actually see the benefits and the effects of it all.
Have there been any eye-opening moments thus far from what you've learned so far?
Certainly, it's a fantastic training opportunity for us. We're actually looking at a training exercise later in the year in the UK, and we're going to take a lot back from this. One of the key things is how the team works. We've integrated really quickly with colleagues from all over the United States and ourselves from England. We've had a great opportunity to understand how they think. We've learned a lot of new lessons, and we've seen even the young firefighters coming forward and actually presenting really good suggestions and solutions, which we as more experienced firefighters have really benefited from.
Chris, I'm impressed more than anything else by the prescribed fire training exchange going on in Ashland, that it lasts as long as it does. It looks like it's spread over 12 or 13 days. That's a lot of material to learn, it sounds like.
It is, and we do have people that come in and leave during that 12 or 13 days, but what it does is it provides folks an opportunity. In the wildland firefighting community, there are what are called task books, because people need to get trained to certain specifications for positions, and it takes a while to get through a task book for a particular position. And so somebody might need 4 or 5 burns just to get all of their assignments done in their task book so they can say, yes, now I'm a holding boss or ignition boss or burn boss or just basic firefighter, wildland firefighter. So sometimes those assignments can go over many days and weeks or even months and years to get specific sign-offs completed, but the TRECs is concentrated in a couple of weeks, and it's very intensive, and it allows folks to exchange the training. And so we have very experienced firefighters who are evaluating less experienced from the top down, and so that gives plenty of opportunity for folks to get what they need out of the program.
So is everybody who trains to be a wildland firefighter going to get trained in prescribed burning as well, or are some people strictly for suppression and not for direction and ignition?
Indeed. There are many, many, probably thousands more firefighters who just come on during the summer for suppression, and they don't participate in prescribed burning. And that's one of the things that we really need to do as a culture is turn it around so 100 years from now, or hopefully less than that, 50, we would see many thousands more working in prescribed proactive burning and many less working in fire suppression, because the need would be less and less over time as we could get caught up with what the natural fire cycles would have been and what's appropriate for where we are right now.
We have a caller here. Here is John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about prescribed burning with Chris Chambers and Robert Gazzard.
Thank you. In the movie Red Skies of Montana, it's about smoke jumping, and in it they backfire. And so I wanted to know if you know what you know about the smoke jumping and the whole thing. It was a movie made, I think, in the late 50s or something like that. But anyway, thanks.
All right, Red Skies of Montana. So not the first time you've been asked to respond to a movie. So Chris Chambers, is that... Well, let's talk about backburning, because I'm glad he asked that, because I guess you call these burnouts now in wildland firefighting. So the fact is that some firefighters already do some prescribed burning, even in wildland firefighting season.
Indeed, and that's one of the big skill crossovers that folks are learning now that would apply during the summertime. That backburning technique is very effective, although can be seen as controversial because some folks don't understand, well, why are you burning property that the fire hasn't even gotten to it? It probably won't. Reality is it will get to those places, and the effectiveness of backburning is to get those places burned under less severe conditions, creating a burned area that the main fire then just basically burns itself out when it gets to it. And it works most of the time. Backburns can end up being thousands of acres, but those are done under less severe conditions. Like at night, a lot of backburning is done at nighttime in order to take advantage of cooler weather and different wind directions than what you would see during the day when you get those strong, hot winds that are pushing the fire. And I don't know, Robert, is it any different in the UK?
We've been using suppression fires during incidents in the north of England for some time now. But it's a unique skill set. You have to be on top of your game, and the people doing that are extremely professional. So, yeah, there's a small cadre of people in the UK doing that now.
While we're talking about the UK and the way you use prescribed fire there, I can imagine that a bit of a difference in the moisture levels between what we have in this part of the world and what you have there. So, you mentioned wildland fires in some, not so much wild as rural areas, but you mentioned also that it's been part of the ecosystem use for forests. But okay, where am I going with this question? See if I can figure this out too. How much of it goes on there? I mean, is it? I mean, we're talking little plots of land here. What's the use of it over there?
So for prescribed burning, let's take, for example, the New Forest down in Hampshire, right on the south coast. It's been done. We burn off, I don't know, a few acres every year to ensure we have a nice mosaic of different burnt areas. And those mosaics actually build resilience into the overall sites. It stops us having really large fires. We have small fires, and we like those small fires because they're an important part of managing the ecosystem. But it stops us having those big ones which then could turn into fires which actually impact on people, impact on infrastructure. And it has amazing benefit for the horses, the cattle, which actually feed in the New Forest. So it's a really important part of the whole culture now, and it's actually done by land managers themselves. They've been doing it for decades now, and they show and exhibit real professionalism in what they do.
As climate changes, are you noticing drier summers, hotter summers? I mean, it seems like there have been quite a few heat waves in Europe for the last few decades.
Well, believe it or not, UK does have heat waves now and again, and it does get hot. So we've actually just come out of that period. We've had quite a few number of wildfires this last weekend. So we've been over here, and we've been hearing about our colleagues actually having to deal with quite important situations over there. Some fires. We have some challenges as we move forward. We believe by the 2050s, 2080s, that wildfires are likely to increase by 30 to 50%. And in particular, that's the increase is going to hit the southeast of England greater than anywhere else. So this is a really important part of us adapting to a new kind of climate and making sure our forests are resilient for the future. We've got lots of challenges. Flooding's a big issue in the UK, but fire will probably come up the agenda as well over that next kind of 50 to 60 year period.
The cultural pivot to going from suppression to prescribed burning in America has been interesting to watch. Is it as big a deal in the UK?
Yeah. We've mainly focused from emergency services on suppressing fires. But what we're seeing now, and I'm the chairman of our local wildfire group, we're seeing bringing firefighters and land managers together, and actually both parties begin to understand the benefits of working together. And one of those key things is actually making more resilient landscapes. We've used to have fire breaks, linear defences in the past, and we used to place a lot of emphasis on those, but we saw them failing. We're adopting a whole site approach now, and making sure we're using fire management zones, things we've learned from America, to ensure that we've got these really, really well-adapted sites.
Prescribed burns and training for them, training exchanges, treks, are the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange with Robert Gazzard, who's a forester and firefighter from England, and Chris Chambers from Ashland Fire and Rescue. You can join in, 800-838-3760 on the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Obviously, as intimately involved as the City of Ashland and Ashland Fire and Rescue are with the Ashland Forest Resiliency Stewardship Project, lots of prescribed burning going up there. Has there been this large bulge of new knowledge gained through the practices on AFR, Chris?
Indeed, there has been. The combination of using our city forest lands linked up with the National Forest Service system on the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest, we've been able to put fire in and have a lot of data in place on the city forest lands alone. We have over 200 permanent data plots. And when we burn through those areas, we have that pre-existing data that tells us how many trees were on the site, you know, how deep the duff that covers the soil, the needles and twigs are. Mm-hmm. And then we can go back and we remeasure all of those statistics to see what the changes are over time. And that's been really informative as to what the fire is doing and are we achieving the effects. We have a brand new Ashland Forest plan for city managed lands coming out to City Council next Tuesday. And it talks a lot about that use of fire and are we achieving the goals that we wanted with fire. And by and large, we are. And it's really encouraging to be able to see the numbers and not just be able to walk out and say, oh, yeah, that looks good. And, you know, it does look good, but it does take the backup having numbers in place to say, oh, we really are achieving our goals. But, you know, we have changed a culture around fire, and so we don't claim to know everything about what the effect is going to be of putting fire back into an ecosystem where it's been long absent. And so we are continually learning by applying the data and the practice and seeing what the effects are, not just the effect the day after you burn or the week after, but what are the effects 3 years after you burn and 5 years after you burn. And the local ecology here, based on fire history studies through the Nature Conservancy, say that we need fire in our lower elevation areas up into the mid and some high elevations too, at least every 10 years. So that's going to be a challenge to have that much fire on the landscape.
Given the amount of data you're collecting, and it sounds like there's probably more of it than anybody can analyze in a short amount of time, but I would think that you're probably getting to a point now where you can say, okay, this didn't work quite the way we thought, and oh, here it is on page 3. We got these bits of data that indicate that's why this happened this way. I mean, have you gotten to that point yet, or are you still kind of – is there still some feeling around in the dark?
There's a little bit of that. Some of the effects that we kind of scratch our heads and say, well, why did it happen this way? You know, in a wildfire, you're not there to monitor what happens on every acre. But in a prescribed burn, you have a pretty good idea what was happening. Just in our 12 acres we burned 2 days ago, one side of the fire burned really hot. It got a lot of wind on it and it had a lot of sun. But just 6 acres away, the other side, we couldn't even get it to burn hardly without applying a lot more heat to it. And so those site differences are really important in driving biodiversity on a landscape scale. You want to have open areas that burned a little bit warmer, and you want to have cool areas that you only really burned a half or less of the whole area. Creates refuge for all kinds of plants, critters that are in the forest, and then they are able to recolonize the other burned areas from those refugia.
Robert Gazzard, fire is fire. It burns and it consumes things, and it, you know, consumes oxygen and fuel and that sort of thing. But how much of what you learn here do you think is applicable to when you get back to the UK, given the difference in ecosystem and cultural landscape and distribution of features in the landscape, that sort of thing?
Well, what's quite interesting about the UK is we actually took a lot of our trees from North America. So over 60% of our trees are actually coming from the west side of America. So actually, it's very applicable to us. We've got some interesting challenges there, and we've taken a lot of time to look around the sites, and actually they are very similar. We've been in the pine plantations the last few days. That's very similar to where I work at home, the commercial plantations that we work within. So yeah, it's directly applicable. There are, of course, we have to adapt to the UK climate, and we will do that. My colleague Andy Elliott from Dorset Fire and Rescue will be taking back a lot of information there. We'll be adapted to the UK, but this is a unique opportunity. And one thing I'm really struck by is the professionalism, not just of the TREX team itself, but all the students there. Everyone's sharing information, everyone's asking questions, and we're having some really good discussions out there. And I think it's one of the key things I've taken back is getting this balance, the balance between environmental, between social, and between economic needs of the local people here, and how we're discussing and debating that, how we can adapt these systems, take them back to our own parts of the United States or to the United Kingdom, and apply them.
Debating is an interesting term to bring in there. So is there still some disagreement at times about what is the best and most effective method in a certain landscape?
No, it's certainly a series of discussions that are going on where people are actually taking their experiences from back home and saying, how does this work here? And everyone's chipping in and actually discussing that. And we're coming up with some really, really interesting solutions or suggestions or ideas for the future.
So what's the general goal, Chris Chambers, for when the Trex is over, the training exchange? What happens when all these people scatter back to their parts of the world to apply what they've learned at the training exchange?
The last day of Trex is May 21st. Folks are going to be checking out that day. Well, we're staying housed here actually at the SOU dorms and eating in the cafeteria with all the students, which is also a neat cultural exchange going on. They'll take off that day. What we're hoping to bring forward from this is learning, jointly the lessons and summarizing them. We will certainly be carrying on, if the weather will allow, after the treks with our scheduled burns. We're hoping to burn in the Ashton watershed. Right now we're a little on the dry end, and the smoke hasn't been predicted to move in the right direction. But by Sunday or Monday, if we get a little bit of precipitation over the weekend to cool things down, and we go back into a warming period, looks like we might have an opportunity to be working locally. And so the bulk of the training exchange folks haven't actually worked in the Ashton watershed yet, but we're looking forward to next week when they do. It's going to be an exciting day to be working in our own backyard.
Which raises the question about the specifications you mentioned in setting any controlled burn-in. Is it a pretty narrow window? I mean, you're looking at just the right wind speed, humidity, temperature, sun exposure, and you get like a five-minute window to go, okay, now, set it now.
Exactly. We hope for a week or two worth of good conditions each spring and sometimes in the fall as well. But it has been a challenge more with the smoke management and smoke movement because we really can't afford to smoke out the entire town. We expect there's going to be some smoke that may fall into town and then it's gone by the next day. Very different juxtaposition than what we're experiencing in our summers now with weeks and weeks on end of that choking smoke from the summer wildfires. So a little bit of smoke is worth a lot in the end, preventing more severe fire.
Well, everybody supports fire until the smoke ends up causing them problems for breathing.
Yeah.
Understood. All right. Training exchange is a really interesting thing going on in Ashland through the 21st of May with how many firefighters from all over the world?
There are over 40 in the whole exchange. Some are local.
Okay. Chris Chambers is the Forest Division Chief for Ashland Fire and Rescue. Robert Gazzard is from England, Firester and firefighter there. Thanks so much for joining us in the exchange.
Thanks, Jeffrey.